I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
Welcome to another episode of Flag Stays Down podcast. Probably last bye week in a while, I think, for Chelsea Football Club. We got a hybrid full house here tonight. Missing Parker, we got myself, Andy, we got Matt, and we got Milwaukee Blues own Scott, bully boy himself, joining us. So we'll start with you, Scott. How are you doing today?
Good. Can't complain too much. I've got no significant rooting interests in football anymore, so I can just genuinely watch and enjoy the show, and that's probably the first time in a long time that's happened, so that's good. Pretty tame but functional, fulfilling weekend. Didn't really have any like social plans or anything, so me and the lady got to kind of go around and do a little bit of like household shopping. We need a little bit of a refresh, so that was nice to kind of look at like boring stuff, but like dining room tables and redecorating and all that jazz and all this boring adult stuff. But it needs to be done, and it's nice to have a weekend from time to time to get that stuff done. So yeah, just nice and easy. Just trying to wait for the thaw with the weather too, so that should be nice. But yeah, other than that though, hanging out. Didn't have any Chelsea to disappoint me at all. The last few days, few weeks, whatever it's been a while. Just got to see Chelsea women win today, so that was pretty awesome. It's all been positive at Chelsea, as far as I'm concerned.
Matt, how about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Didn't have a ton going on this weekend. First time that's happened in a while. So my wife and I just got to hang out with our little one for most of the day. For most of the weekend, actually. I was oddly productive today. Got up early with the little man and watched some of the Belgian league. So I watched some of that because it was on early, and then I watched Bayern lose to Werder Bremen. So just good start to the day. But yeah, then did some laundry, dinner, just cleaned up in the basement a little bit, all the fun stuff that I enjoy doing. But yeah, and we're here on a Sunday night, so nothing to really argue about. Collins, how are you?
It's calm before the storm. As I was telling you guys, pre-pod here for me, new boss coming into town. So looking forward to that. But no, it was good. Smoke a little brisket today, which apparently is Scott pointed out to me earlier, got flagged as explicit content on Twitter. So I always appreciate that.
I was so confused with that. I was so like, what the hell is he posting? And why did it get flagged? So now you know, you're on a list.
Yeah, right. No clue. I appreciate Elon Musk looking out for the world. No, it turned out well, and just a nice way to cap off the weekend here. But Matt, talking about Belgian league, I watched an MLS, well, it's MLS preseason, MLS game for the first time in years, I would say, Miami playing El Salvador earlier this weekend. And then I looked at Miami's schedule, and I real quick want to just get your guys' take on this. Miami's doing a freaking world tour here. They're going to Hong Kong, they're going to Saudi Arabia, they're going to Japan. Meanwhile, my team, Sporting Kansas City, is just hanging out in Tucson like they do every year. I know Chelsea does tours in preseason, but like a tour of an entire continent like Asia seems a bit much for MLS, right?
But I guess I didn't know about this till you just said it. But if you've got 2010 Barcelona as your squad, they sell. So build it and they will come, I guess, right?
They got one guy that's pretty decent at the sport, so everybody kind of knows him, and so they'll shell out whatever money to definitely go watch him play, or even be on the bench. As long as he's in the stadium, they'll go. So
I know,
it's classic, just follow the money.
I know we all love Josef Martinez, but I don't know if he's that big of a deal.
I mean, he is for me, but
Right. Well, turn into our club, Chelsea Football Club. We talked a little bit last week about Robert Sanchez versus Jordi Petrovic. And there's been a lot of discussion about that now this week and in various news publications, whatnot. So we brought our resident goalkeeper expert on and Scott, because we don't know what the hell we're talking about. So we want to hear from somebody who actually knows what they're talking about. Scott, what do you make of the whole number one keeper debate?
Well, first off, thank you for humoring me and making me think like I actually know a damn thing about what I'm talking about. Very informally, I mean, I played, so like I kind of know a little bit about that. But no, I guess it's a non-issue to me. I don't understand the controversy one bit. It's Petrovic for me, for sure. And it's not even really that close. And I don't think it's a matter of, you don't lose your job to injury. Because Sanchez got injured and Petrovic came in because he got injured. But at this point, I think there's enough of a body of work to say that Petrovic, at least as of right now, is your better option than Sanchez is. If you'll humor me, I did a little bit of research and I don't have any stats. I just have some examples. And just to preface this, what I did basically the other night is I went through and I just looked at all of Chelsea's Premier League losses so far. So doesn't count draws or losses. Well, maybe one draw. There is one draw on there. But I'm just basically just looking at all of the weak goals that I recall watching as a fan Sanchez make. So first one, and it's pretty obvious, is in the draw with Arsenal. The first goal he lets in, this is Chelsea up 2-0. First thing he does is he plays an absolutely horrible pass, which was worse than I recall watching it back. That he's hardly under pressure at all. He plays it directly to Rice, and Rice fires it into the goal. And of course, that ended up going 2-2 for a draw. That's the goal that got them back into the game, that got them some belief. And then it was just from there on out, you just always knew it was going to be a draw. And there we go. So there we go. Drop points, two drop points. Another one that was just awful. 1-0 loss to Villa a little bit earlier in the year. Villa, top six team. Sure would have liked to take some points off of them at this point. The goal that was a 1-0 game. So the only goal that was scored was Ollie Watkins scoring from an insanely tight angle, and it goes right through his legs. So just one of those points where you need your keeper to just make the save. And it's not even like a difficult save. It's just a save. And he just completely flubbed it. Let's see. So this is where I start getting a little bit nerdy into my, I think I know what the hell I'm talking about, tactics. So 1-0 loss to Nottingham Forest. Again, one goal. This is the only goal in the game. So lost points there. And it's a one on, basically a one on one, not quite a one on one, but he is just way too flat on his line, not cutting down the angle. And if you just rewatch it back, I mean, the striker just puts it to the side of him, and it didn't even look like he really tried a whole lot. Just his angle was way, way off. He just never really had a chance at it. And I just think he needs to kind of cut that angle down a little bit more to at least give a chance. So here is the most damning one that I found in my mind. And interestingly enough, it's actually the one that I think is where he got injured in the first place and why he hasn't been playing yet. So it's the 2-0 loss against Everton. And I watched this back, and I watched it probably a dozen times to make sure I was seeing what I thought I was seeing. So whoever the ball starts with, I have no idea, but somewhere around midfield on like their left wing, and they start dribbling it down, and you see Sanchez turn his back to the ball and start running toward his net, which makes sense that he needs to recover back to his own goal line. But the fact that he turns his back on it was already kind of a little bit interesting. Like it wasn't like the ball carrier was right on him. Like he had plenty of space. So instead, he turns his back and runs back all the way to his line. And then he starts coming back forward again to the striker to start cl closing off the angle, which is really weird. And then he attacks the striker, or to close down the angle to kind of go for the ball. And then I think that's where he gets the injury, is he takes the ball away correctly. It bounces over to the wing, and it's really, this is where I started to rewind it like a bunch of times. Is he kind of runs back towards his goal line and makes a very desperation save to just like throw himself in front of the ball. But from the angle that it's shot at, he's got more than enough time to get his feet settled, to get his feet right, and to get established and like make a save. And also he's got a defender between himself and the striker anyway. And he instead does this desperation save before the guy even kicks the ball. And so he's midway in the air and the guy just puts it past him. So of course everything is a bang bang play. It's all going to be, he may try to make a desperation save and it didn't work out, but it all just looked really off to me. And I guess, the point that I'm trying to make just in an overall scheme of things is Sanchez just seems to be like, he gets by in his big frame. He gets by on the ability to make some pretty decent saves. I can't take that away from him. But it just seems like his like mechanics and like decision making are just a bit off. And again, like not getting settled and stuff like that. Like that's just like your professional keeper. And I mean, he's just very fine. He's very fine. And I'm not gonna sit here and say that like Petrovic is like our next Czech or anything like that. But save for the first goal that he let in against Everton. So this is when he came in for Sanchez and extremely weak punch out of the box, didn't even get out of the box, and then that led to a goal. That was pretty damning. There really hasn't been a whole lot. And it's kind of like kind of like when you're talking about like NFL, like an offensive lineman. Like if you're not talking about him, it's a good thing. Like that kind of seems like what Petrovic is on a little bit. Like he's definitely made some really good saves, but there hasn't been nearly as many oh shit, like butthole pucker moments as there has been with Sanchez. Like whether it's playing with his feet or just looking sloppy and nervous. And like if there's anything that this team doesn't need, it's another player that just is going to cause nerves to then trickle through the rest of the squad. So that's my long-winded but generalized thoughts on the X's and O's as I see them. But
No, and I appreciate the deep dive there and some of the mechanical thing, the decision making stuff like that. The thing that I worry about, and I'm kind of on the fence. I like Big Bob, but I think Jordy has played well. But when I look at Jordy, I also look at, and God, I should be on the NCAA selection committee here. I look at his strength of schedule, and Sanchez faced Arsenal, City, United, well, United not so much, but the faced the big boys, right? And I look at who Jordy has faced, and it's 20 minutes of Everton, and you got Sheffield, Newcastle, Wolves, and then a bunch of relegation teams. And so really the only games that I went back and was able to compare, like for like, was Fulham, where they both kept a clean sheet. Sanchez back earlier in the year, and then and Jordy here, and then Luton Town, where Sanchez kept a clean sheet. And Jordy, it should have been a clean sheet. His defense didn't do any didn't do any good service for him there, as we conceded two goals in that one. But I just worry, what is Jordy gonna do in the big game? And I guess I don't know enough, looking at mechanics or decision making or anything like that to make a determination.
I think the big thing for me is like, yes, the strength of schedule isn't the greatest, but let's not forget that Big Bob also hasn't fared that great against the so-called relegation teams, right? Like we look at Nottingham Forest, a match early season. They're still finding out that they have people on their squad from like the last two seasons when they brought in, you know, basically an entire team, staff, probably fans, just to give them a kit and be like, hey, you're on the team, go warm up. It to me, stuff like that, like he didn't fare well even in those matches. So I think it's kind of hard to say like, oh, strength of schedule isn't that great. He struggled against those teams too. I mean, that's just kind of my take on it. Now, whether Jordy is going to be able to hold up against, you know, the big boys remains to be seen. It also is a question, can our defense give him any sort of support? Because if there's no support, that's going to be very, very tough on any goalkeeper, regardless of if it's Jordy or Sanchez. It's going to be tough on any keeper. I think that's something that we also need to kind of keep an eye on too, is just what the defense allows or doesn't allow. That, I think, to me is going to be the biggest part. I think right now, Jordy is doing his job better than Sanchez did his. I wouldn't say it's like leaps and bounds better, but it's noticeably better. There seems to be more comfort on the defensive side of the ball, especially when they go back to the keeper. Like, I don't get worried when Jordy is on the ball. Anytime it goes back to Sanchez, I'm freaking out because I've seen it too many times. But Jordy's not doing anything wrong to not give him that number one spot, regardless of Sanchez being injured or not.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. I think you pretty much nailed exactly what I think too. I don't know enough to say that have they changed up the tactics significantly since Jordy came in. I don't think they have with like in regards to like passing around the back, because it looks like they're still doing the same damn thing. Because how many times am I screaming at the TV wondering why they're still, you know, tic-tacking around the box instead of just like hoofing it long? And that being the case, you know, back when Sanchez was playing, it was all those oh shit moments, and we still got those oh shit moments now. But it doesn't seem to have anything to do with the goalkeeper. It has to do with just guys, just clear the box. But like when Sanchez would get it, that's when you have your oh shit. And I don't see it with Petrovic. And as far as the strength of schedule goes, I mean, you can only play who's in front of you, right? And I know that's a little bit of a cop out, but like at the same time, you know, the team's playing better. It's a little more solidified. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that Petrovic is like, you know, a 10, whereas Sanchez has been a 4. Or like, you know, I think like the difference is not hugely significant, but it's certainly one of those where it's not saying that, hey, Sanchez, once you're healthy, you're back in, baby. Like, it's definitely not that. And I just think it's, you know, the eye test and the stats tell me that Petrovic is playing better. So you play with the hot hand for right now, I guess, right? And if Petrovic then starts to fuck up, then hey, Sanchez, good thing we got a pretty decent backup keeper who could potentially maybe be our number one. Who knows, you know? I mean, the future, who knows what the future has to hold for them. I don't know, but.
So I guess that leads into my next question for you. And Matt, I got your answer on this last week, but you know, how much of a leash does, you know, when Sanchez is back healthy, whoever's starting in goal, how much of a leash does that individual get? Because we've got quite the schedule coming up. You got a must win game against Middlesbrough. You got an FA Cup game that's pretty much a must win against Villa. And then, you know, in the next month or so, you've got Liverpool, City, and Spurs all coming up. So, you know, how much room for fuck ups does that starting keeper have?
That's a good question. I mean, I definitely think you got to give it a few games. I mean, you know, if it's you fuck up, you know, 2-3 games in a row, then yeah, yank them. If it's like, hey, you fucked up against Villa, you know, in the FA Cup, and you're pretty much looking, you know, decent, nothing, you're not the reason for our failings outside of that, then I think you just still stick with it. I mean, you know, not apples to apples, but Sanchez had plenty of fuck ups and was only had to get injured for him to get pulled. So I don't understand why Petrovic would have any different, you know, leniency, I guess. That's You know, I think especially with a goalkeeper, I mean, it's for any player, but like a goalkeeper especially, like, sure, you can fuck up and then the next game you're right back at it, you know. Just put that one in the bin and let's go right back to it, you know.
Yeah, and Matt mentioned, I think Matt mentioned Nottingham Forest earlier, and I just think of Matt Turner, who has now been benched twice
Yeah.
for them, and what a confidence killer that's got to be for him. So yeah, I really don't care what happens. I just want to avoid a
Yeah.
Kepa and Mendy situation where
Sure.
we just fuck them both up.
Yeah. Well, and I also just think too, in a grander scheme of things, that this team just needs consistency with their players, you know. I mean, this is maybe a larger conversation, but like especially since the boat has kind of been steadied a little question mark, maybe. I mean, I'm not really into, you know, chopping and changing just because, you know, this wasn't a really good outing for Petrovic one day, so you go to Sanchez or something like that. You know, I mean, especially with goalkeepers, just, you know, if you want to do that to like a winger or something like that, say, hey, today's not your day, you know, give him a little bit of rest. That's one thing, but I think a goalkeeper is a totally different thing. So.
Well, that's a very interesting point there, Scott. And you know, talking about the wingers, you had an in-form Mihailo Mudrik playing well, scores, and then we haven't seen him since. Raheem Sterling kind of been out of form, I would say. He's had moments, but not spectacular. He's been filling in that left wing role, and then Ben Chilwell gets subbed into that role with Mudrik on the bench. Guys, what is Poch thinking here?
You remember how they used to call us left back FC? We're left wing FC now, apparently, but it's not a good thing. It's like a just 'cause thing. No, I don't know. I'm actually a little bit frustrated with that Mudrik situation. I'm very, very happy that Chilwell's back, and I'll take him as a striker if that's how we got to get him on the field. But yeah, I agree. Mudrik has been playing well, and you know, just being the type of player that he is, like he was finally hitting a stride, and I think that, you know, he could use that consistency in play time, that consistency in form, you know, just kind of keeping, hey, you played good, you're in the starting lineup again, you know, and that just like didn't happen. It just kind of seems like, hey, you're playing well and I'm gonna put you on ice again. And it's just like, if there's one player on the squad that cannot have that happen to, it's Mudrik. So I don't get it. I definitely think that's a big glaring miss on Poch's part. I don't understand. I mean, the only thing that makes a little bit of sense is if he still doesn't like quite trust him, he just wants to steady the ship and say, we're going to take 1 point, we're going to take 3 points, whatever it's going to be. And if Mudrik he thinks is a liability, then whatever. But I don't think that that's what he was prior to being put back on the bench. So I don't know. Yeah, that Chilwell thing, when Chilwell's subbing on, I was like, oh, cool, we're finally going to have an actual left back. And then he starts playing left wing. And I was just like screaming at the TV. I'm like, what is happening here? I didn't get it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Scott, get him out there any way you can, right? I'm okay with it. Not like I want it to happen often, but I'm okay with it in this instance. Just because you, and I got to remember this game correctly, because we had the lead, and you bring in Chills, a little bit more defensively proficient than Mudrik, right? Mudrik is just your just bomb it and let him run. Chilwell is at least a little bit more defensive minded, and I think that's probably why that switch happened. But I completely agree. I love Mudrik. I need to see more of him consistently. I don't. I also agree. I don't see how he has a great run of form, then all of a sudden he's kind of pushed to the side to let a struggling Raheem Sterling kind of he wrecks himself on the pitch for 75, 80 minutes. It's classic Raz, right? He hit a good run of form, then he dips, then he comes back out of it, then he dips again. He's in one of his dips right now. It just doesn't work. But at the end of the day, Chilwell is back. I like the fact that he got 30 minutes. Usually with something like that, we would see maybe like a 10-minute cameo or something like that. But I like a little bit more substance in his return. To me, I think you wanted to be a little bit more defensive minded with that change.
Yeah, and I think it's a broader issue. I think it's, and granted, none of us are in training, right? So we don't get to see the day to day, but just going off what we've seen in matches here, you know, I don't understand Levi Colwill as a left back to begin with. You know, I think Malagusto plays fine over there. It's not his natural position, but he plays fine over there. He still gives you a little bit of an attack. And then Axel Disasi on the right, if we're down wing backs, he at least provides some defense. He won't give you anything in attack, but he'll provide some defense. Colwill doesn't seem to provide either, at least, you know, to my eye test here. Raz hasn't given you much in a while. We already beat that to death with Mudrick on the bench. Palmer playing on the right wing seems like a waste to me. He seems, you know, more of a number 10, at least in my eyes. And that would free up Noni to come on, who gives you something else. He throws a changeup at opposing defenses. And so I can't, I know a lot of people were, you know, given the talk of, oh, I don't understand what these owners are doing in terms of recruitment. I don't really understand what Poch is doing in terms of lineup. I understand the recruitment part of it. I understand the team that we're building. I don't understand how they're being put together on the pitch though. And that's kind of one of my big concerns with Pochettino.
Yeah. I think, I don't have a big strong take on it necessarily. I think the only way that I can fix, in my opinion, the whole Levi Colwill as a left back thing, because it hasn't worked. I like Colwill as a player and I think he's great. So I'm glad that he's getting a lot of playing time. So it's kind of like the catch 22 there. I do think that going to a traditional left back, right back, two center backs is going to be good for us. So like, whenever Chilwell can finally get healthy, I don't want to see DeSassi as right back and I don't want to see Cole as a left back. You know, I don't want to see that shit. And I think that, you know, we've all ragged on Sterling and I'm right there with you. I think that my biggest thing is give Mudrick Sterling's minutes. And once Chilwell's healthy, have him be left back. If you got to manage his minutes and then you got to say, okay, well, Colwell's like our backup left back, fine. And then our center backs, once they get healthy, we've got a bunch of center backs where Thiago doesn't have to play every single game. And DeSassi, if he's got a bad game, then Badiashile can come in and Cole can keep getting minutes because I think we all think or believe that he's a genuine stud. That's what I think.
Don't forget about Alfie at right back. The new legend himself.
Obi Mikel minutes, baby. Just get on in and fuck shit up.
Matt, you're not allowed to buy his jersey for at least okay. 5 years. Right. It'll be gone like Billy G.
Yeah, it was a sad day when that happened.
All right. Well, there has been some squad depth, I would say, coming back in the last couple of weeks. Not a lot of outgoing activity as of yet. Not a lot of incoming activity, but definitely some loan recalls or terminations. Andre Santos, back from Nottingham Forest after playing a total of, I believe, 44 minutes. Cesare Cassette, after featuring 25 times for Leicester, who lead in the championship, has been recalled. And then Diego Morea coming back after his loan is terminated by Lyon. So a bunch of guys who featured pretty prominently in the preseason are now back with the squad. Are any of them going to make a difference in the second half of the year?
Well, going back a few weeks when it was just Santos coming back, I was thinking that he probably could be a difference maker. I think that he could be a depth piece on our apparently three-man midfield that plays 90 minutes a game, every game, so he can be a good depth piece. And I think, you know, everybody even preseason and before he even came over, like he's a genuine stud. And yeah, he's young and he's going to have to learn. So I'm genuinely excited for him to be over here. So I am hoping that he becomes a depth piece. And Cassidy, same thing. Well, let me rephrase that. I'm excited about Cassidy as a player. I don't quite understand why he came back or why they recalled him, I guess. So maybe there's something going on with injuries or something we're not quite aware of. I'm not really sure. But just him and Santos, I was really, really excited about in preseason. So I guess in a way, I'm excited that he's back, but I'm just concerned what that's going to do for his development as a very, very young, raw player. Marrera, I just have no idea. Sure, he can be a depth piece because it seems like our wingers, you can always use another option. And what little I know about him, he seems to be a Madueke type in the matter of that he runs at you and tries to cause chaos. And maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know a whole lot about him, but I don't quite understand. So I mean, hopefully he gets some minutes with the dev squad. I mean, all I really care about with those guys coming back is that they get playing time, whether it's with Chelsea or if it's with a dev squad or something. I know there's some complications them going back on loan. So I think that a lot of those two players, especially Santos and Cassidy, have a really, really bright future. And I thought, well, Santos wasn't doing a damn thing at Nottingham Forest. I'm glad he's back. But Cassidy, I really like that he was just getting minutes at a quality team in the championship. That seemed like a good loan to me.
Well, Matt knows this, but I'm great at reading the tarot cards, predicting the future, reading between the lines here. Santos, I understand coming back, and he's with the Brazilian U23 team. I think that the tournament he's in runs through middle of February, so there's no way he's going back out on loan, because then by the time he acclimates to his new team, season's gonna be over. Kasete can go out on loan, but I don't believe he is. You have two midfielders being recalled. Apparently, money is needed. Not this year. We didn't get any trouble this year, but might be needed next year. I think Connor's out the door in the next 10 days. Kasete fits his type, or his profile. And Santos can cover as a six if you want to allow Enzo to go a little bit more forward. I my belief is that there's something in the works there.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. Didn't quite consider that for some reason, but that's a pretty good point.
I hope that's not the case, because you are losing arguably your best midfielder so far this season, not only on the team, but in the Premier League, and you're having him go to your rival. To me, that doesn't make any sense.
What about I saw this comp the other day. I thought it was an interesting one. What about, a Mason Mount style comparison? Guy who has a lot of minutes by the age of 23, he's played a lot of first team football, and he's known for his aggression and his amount of running and all of that. And Mount has fizzled out. But is Gallagher prone to that? Because I could see that comparison in terms of, when Mount first started with the club, he was Mr. Runs and runs and runs and runs. And that's kind of what Gallagher has done this year and did at Palace and did last year. And then, I worry about that. And so it's, cash in while you can, at least in my opinion.
I don't see it that way, but go ahead, Scott.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was just gonna say that the Conor Gallagher question is one for the ages for sure. I mean, I honestly do get it on both sides. There's the business side of me that says, the pure profit, and there's the Chelsea how to build a squad type of guy in me that says, well, at the best possible version of this squad in the next year or two, is he in my starting 11? And he's not. So I kind of understand the long-termism of it. Then there's also the there's no doubt about it that him and Cole Palmer have been the best players on the squad this year. And the whole Chelsea through and through, he's been here since he's been 2 years old, whatever shit. There has to be a little bit of a recognizing what you have when you have it, and especially with the situation that you're in. And I just think that this transfer window is one where you don't want to rock the boat. Finally starting to steady the ship a little bit. I know I keep saying that, but like finally starting to get a little bit of consistency, and then you're going to get rid of possibly your best player, who is your captain. I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now. If they get 60 mil for him, I'd say you're never, ever, ever going to get that much money, more money for him. And then also, if he goes to Tottenham, that's going to hurt too. So it's just a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation in my mind. I really don't. I'm going to be happy if he stays, and I'm going to be understanding if he goes. All right, so it kind of sucks.
Well,
for me, it has to be quite the price tag, because the latest I saw was reports of like 50 mil for Broya.
That's a master stroke.
So if that's the case, then Connor should be about 200.
I agree.
It's got to be, it has to be a ridiculous number. I think that's the only way that you actually go through with it. It has to be a ridiculous number. Your biggest rival in the middle of the season, you're arguably your best player of the season and best midfielder in the Premier League right now, arguably, you're just going to send him middle of the year during this whole rebuild and everything like that, when he has been your model of consistency through and through. Like, and so Collins, to your point about Mason Mount, Connor Gallagher, Mount also was put on there to score and assist. That's not Connor's forte. I'll go a different direction. I'm not saying that he is as good as this individual. I'm just saying that they didn't have to really score a lot of goals or assist either, and they just kind of ran. N'Golo Kanté.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
I have said this. No, I'm with you, Matt. I am totally, totally with you, because that is when Kanté was still around and Connor was just starting to like really get some minutes with the squad. And I totally agree with you. It's not the same, but if there was anybody that can fill the Kanté role, it is Connor Gallagher. I 1000% agree with you.
So, Collins, before you freak out, I'm not saying that they are the same. I'm not saying Connor and N'Golo Kanté at his prime are neck and neck. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, as far as like kind of what they're known for, right? Connor's not known for scoring goals. Assisting is probably not going to be high up there either. But that box to box, that workhorse, that tracking back, that defending, you know, kind of going forward, it seems like that's kind of where Connor does his best work. So that's kind of how I see that. I don't really see the Mount comparison, so to speak. I see it more of an N'Golo Kanté comparison, but with the understanding, I don't think that they are at the same level.
Well, I'll throw one more comp at you, since we're throwing out comps here. Callum Hudson-Odoi. Very highly rated. Bayern offering 70 mil for him. We're like, nah, we're good. What did we sell him to Forest for? Like two?
I think so. Yeah, we should have taken them German francs. Is that what they, Deutschmarks? Should have taken them. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess a little bit of FOMO for me is, you know, you don't want to wait too long on selling Connor, because I think his profile is one that's easily replaceable. I think we have guys in the system who do what he does.
I agree. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right. Well, I also did look up Brazil U23 schedule. You can check them on FS2 on Wednesday against Bolivia. That'll be Andre Santos's first game in the pre-Olympic tournament down there. So make sure to check that out. So, Scott, you were bringing up pre-pod here, a little bit of a match-goer controversy, we'll say. And you know, we talked a little bit about it with our man to get the fuck out of here last week and the whole Argyle advertising stunt. What was it that they had at the women's match today?
I saw one tweet about it, so I should probably check my sources. But I just saw something where it was like up in like the second level in a corner, there seemed to be like a mocked up Hilton Hotels room. So kind of like a, what'd you call it? Like you go to IKEA, you see like the room built, like that type of thing. And whoever posted it was like, oh, you know, we sold our soul or whatever. And it's just kind of funny because it's at the women's game, which should be sold out at Stamford Bridge. That's a topic for another day, but it wasn't. The entire top level was nearly empty. So it wasn't affecting shit. And the club is just getting seemingly money for it. So I am of the maybe more American mindset where I say, it doesn't really affect a whole lot. Is it cheesy? Yes. In an ideal world, would you have that? No, probably not. But the reality of the situation is we're a big spending club that can use any dollar we get. because there's teams like Everton and Nottingham Forest getting penalties and shit like that. So I say if that's a way that we can still buy the Enzos and Caicedos and all those types of players of the world, then I say you do whatever you got to do, and it doesn't affect me none. It doesn't affect the players any.
I'm all for it. Just brings me back to the Bad News Bears with whoever their sponsor was on their shirt. It just like you just get whatever you get. Like everybody gets a sponsorship. Like you're just bringing in money at this point. I don't care. Like that's part of FFP. You have to find different ways and stuff like that to raise funds. You can't just it's not just strictly selling players. You also have to run a full-blown business. You need advertising. That's part of the game. And yes, it's probably more predominant now than it was before, given the current state of kind of Chelsea Football Club, especially with all of the rumored allegations and FFP rule breaches and all that stuff. Like, yeah, we need to raise funds because we spent almost $1 billion on players over the last 2 seasons. So, yeah. We spent a lot. Now we got to bring in some money. I'm fine with it. Like, it doesn't bother anybody. It just bothers the people that are, oh, this wasn't how it used to be. Well, guess what? You have new ownership. So it doesn't really matter. It's paying the bills. Whatever. Do what you got to do.
No, I'll give Chelsea credit on this. I can understand from for the matchgoers that being annoying. I don't know if I would call it the club selling out, because like I said last week, we were doing this when Roman was here. The movie promos and the weird things in the stands and all that. But the last couple of years we've been terrible at marketing ourselves. But was it August we got our new director of marketing? Came in from AC Milan or Inter Milan or one of those clubs. Trying to remember what his name was, but I can't. But you look at Manchester United bringing in City CEO to be their new CEO because they wanted best in class in all positions, and that's what Chelsea have been trying to do as well, especially in the front office. And I think they did that. If this guy started August, September, whatever, he's been in the role for 3 months, and we now have a sleeve sponsorship. We have a training kit sponsor. The women's team have a new exclusive sponsor for their kits going forward. We've got marketing deals for Argyle, whatever the hell the movie was. You got Hilton at the stadium. Things are moving, which they were not for a long time. So yeah, like you said, bring that money in so that we can then send it out to bring in players and just keep that cycle going. Better players, more winning, more money, and then keep recycling, right? You got to pay for Victor Osimhen somehow.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. If Chelsea was top of the table right now, this would be not an issue. Nobody'd be talking about it. But everybody's got to pile on to the new American owners that don't know what the hell they're doing. But I mean, I think what you just laid out, Collins, was you nailed it. So
Casper Stillsvig just found it. That's who it is from AC Milan. That's who we brought in. All right. Well, back to the pitch here. We'll do a little bit of a little bit of predictions. We got two cup matches coming up. We got second leg, or as Parker likes to say, the second half of the Carabao Cup semifinal coming up here at home versus Middlesbrough before playing Aston Villa on Friday in the FA Cup. Cup seems to be our way into Europe for next year. Either cup, both cups, doesn't matter to me. But what are we thinking for Middlesbrough? We're down 1-0 at the moment. Can we turn that result around this week?
First off, if we win both cups, does that take the Conference League and Europa League and then consolidate into the Champions League? That's how that works, right? Pretty sure
Club
that's how it works.
World Cup at that point, I think.
Got it. Well, hey man, we're in business, baby. Oh man, I don't know, man. I haven't put a whole lot of thought towards what's going to happen. I'm nervous because we all know they're just going to park Middlesbrough. This is they're just going to park the bus, and we historically, ever since I can remember, have a bad time of doing of breaking that down. So I feel like I'm maybe being a little bit optimistic, but I think it goes to penalties and we win in penalties. It's going to be a tight affair. And I want to be optimistic about Villa, but they're just a better team than us right now. Is that home or away?
That is home.
Well, I was going to say, I still don't think it matters a whole lot, but that makes me feel a little bit better. But I don't know. I just think that Villa is just a much better team than us right now. So I think they take that, unfortunately.
Middlesbrough, the Middlesbrough game. I'm going to go 3-1 Chelsea. I'm going to be extremely optimistic. I'm going to say that we start off the match by smacking them right in the mouth. We get a very early goal. We don't allow them time to set up in that low block. We just get them right from the start. And then from there, we kind of that kind of forces them out a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. And that gives us the opportunity for the second one. And then they claw their way back to make it 2-2 on aggregate, and then we end up with a late winner to kind of move through. That's how I see that one playing out. Villa, as long as somebody takes Emi Martinez out, I don't care. That's my only hope for that match. Just take him out. But that aside, toss a coin. Let me know where it lands. That's going to be my answer. Hard to say right now.
Yeah, man, Scott, I can't believe that Matt and I are the optimistic ones here on Middlesbrough. it reminds me of this is how far we've fallen in the last year. It reminds me of the Dortmund fixture from last year. We go down 1-0, come back. What do we win that one? 3-0, 2-0. In the return leg, I think we see something similar here. I think that loss was a little bit of a wake up call, and I'm hoping that we see what this team, what we've seen them be capable of, and that's dropping plenty of goals on opponents. I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes on Middlesbrough's part. I'm pretty sure they played this weekend, so they are not going to be as rested as we are. So hoping to see maybe 3-0. Matt, maybe like you said, 3-1, something like that. And then Villa, I'm actually more confident in than Middlesbrough.
Oh my.
Yeah. I mean, Villa started the year hot, and they were one of my picks in the preseason for a top four spot. And I still think they have a chance at getting it, but they've only won 3 out of their last 7 in all comps. They have not looked great in the matches that I've watched them over the last couple of weeks. I think that they are there for the taking, but now, oh man, I'm talking myself out of it at this point. Because we always seem to run into those clubs that are struggling, and then it's bam, 4-0, we lose. Right. No, I'm going to go 1-0 in that one. I think we're through in both cups.
Yeah. I don't think I have a strong opinion on the Villa one. Like I said, just looking at apples to apples, I think they're better than us, but you're right. I mean, they could be focusing on top four, maybe. So maybe they don't play their best lineup. That's possible. And that's maybe our chance. With Middlesbrough, though, I can talk myself into and out of being optimistic just as easily, because I can say, oh, well, you know, Middlesbrough is going to fuck up or something like that. But I think like the layoff is either going to be the best thing that happened to us or the worst thing. Because I think if this was prior to the layoff, I'd say both these games are, they could be ours for sure. But this kind of like break in momentum, this break in stride, whatever, you know, I just hope that all those players went somewhere nice and warm and got a couple of drinks in them or something nice and relaxed and cleared their minds or something, and don't like come back rusty. I just hope they come back happy and healthy. Most importantly, healthy.
Much agreed. Looking at the rest of the season here, we got 17 matches to go. So still a long ways to go. Sitting in 9th, better than last year. Right. And 4 points out of the top 6. I believe West Ham with the draw on the weekend goes 4 points clear of us. So we're in the Carabao Cup semis. We're in the fourth round of the FA Cup, ninth in the Premier League. What's an acceptable finish to the year? What allows Poch to keep his job going into year two?
I think that it's kind of two different questions. I think that realistically, Poch to keep his job, it's to show considerable progress, considerable investment in the talent and nurturing of that talent, which I personally haven't quite seen yet. But you know, your young players that you're supposed to, you know, improve and get better, I need to see that. What I think is acceptable just from a results and whether this keeps his job or not, I don't know. But I think that either of those cups, I think, is acceptable. I would love to get into a European place, and that could be what this year's sixth, maybe seventh, or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, I think sixth is what we're looking at for sure right now, possibly seventh.
Sixth is doable, you know, but it's just by looking at what this season has looked like, it just doesn't, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that. They could do it though. I mean, if players start coming back healthy and staying healthy, and Nkunku, Chukwuemeka, you know, you're solid at the back. Maybe you get Chilwell to play actual left back and you get Gusto to actually play right back. You know, I mean, they can, if that all happens. But the only thing is that there's been nothing this year to tell me that all those players are going to come back and nobody's going to have a setback or anything like that. And that's the only thing that I worry about. But so anyway, I would say that either of those cups would be great, and a top six finish, sixth place, would be great. I think realistically it might be more around like seventh or eighth, and hopefully a cup.
I think the better question is, does Poch keep his job long enough to see Lavia actually play another game? I think that's really the question. I'd like to know the odds on that one personally. But I don't think it really matters. Honestly, if from Poch's job perspective, I don't think it matters. I think the board is going to back him through the summer regardless. I don't see them making that drastic of a change with the amount of money that they've spent and also the process of going through and hiring a new manager. After going through a lot of big names, they plowed through the weeds and they ended up with Pochettino. Everybody, like, even when you hear people, like the players talking in interviews, like, yeah, it's a project. Like, everybody is aware of that. It's not like some hidden secret. Everybody knows it's a project. So I think he gets at least a year. I think I would cap it at 18 months. But so I don't think the results really matter. From my standpoint, I would agree. I'd like to see one cup. And then I think six is very reasonable. City's kind of been doing un-city things. Liverpool's playing well. I mean, United is United. Newcastle was near the top for a while. They were kind of falling off. West Ham is hit or miss depending on the day. So I think there's still a lot of room, not only for our team to grow, but for the other teams to kind of fall off the pace a little bit. So I think that's a very wide open and realistic possibility that we get into that top six.
Yeah, and I think the cups take priority. Carabao Cup, we beat Middlesbrough, and then it's either Fulham or Liverpool. I think Liverpool are ahead on egg right now with Fulham. We always play Liverpool tough. I can't remember a game for the longest time now where we've been killed by Liverpool. So I think Carabao Cup is a real opportunity. FA Cup, who knows, right? That's a kind of any given match day can go any given way. So if you don't win a cup, then the league becomes more important. If we do win a cup, we could stay in ninth, and I think we'll be fine. Or Poch will be fine. Now, I would like to see us move up into sixth. And Matt, like you said, I think teams can fall off. United can fall off. West Ham can fall off. Brighton, I think, is a mid-table club kind of in disguise right now. So I think there's room to move there, but I think you got to prioritize those cup competitions first. And I am disappointed to say, Matt, I could not find the odds of Poch managing Lavia in a second match. He does have 14-1 odds of being sacked at some point this season, though. So you putting any money on that?
Yeah, I'll put money on that.
Scott, how about you?
I mean, yeah, no, I think Lavia might not even exist. He might be a deep fake. I'm not sure. I don't think we've got him, actually.
And you and Parker are on the same page. I love that. All right. Well, boys, that pushes up against the hour here. So any closing thoughts?
Let's just big week. So here's hoping that everybody comes back refreshed and healthy. I just want to see him look good. I want to see him play good. I want to see him get some goals. I want to see him play good defense. Yeah, it's such a catch all, but I just want to see him play good. And even if there's going to be a couple of tough games, I want that to be, you know, tough fought against Villa, and I want them to blow up Boro. I want them to blow him out of the water. Here's hoping.
Don't fuck it up.
I like that as well. I like both. All right. Well, make sure to follow us on social media. We're just on everything at Flag Down Pod. You can also get us wherever you get your podcasts. You can get us now on YouTube Music. So make sure to check us out there as well. Same as everywhere else. Just search at Flag Down Pod. Scott, thank you for joining us this week. Matt, I'm still trying to kick you off the pod, but we'll see where that leads us. But here's to a hopefully a good week. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.